Welcome, everybody. This is Billy the Brain, and you're listening to Brainstorming with Billy the Brain. We're here today on Thursday, and it's going to be Celebrity Thursday today. I'm looking forward to the two guests that we have. For those of you that are new to our show, Brainstorming with Billy the Brain, I bring you the best guests in business, entertainment, sports, and the local community. And we dig in and do long format interviews to sort of get behind the curtain to see what these people have to offer and how they got to where they are. Today, as I said, is Celebrity Thursday. We're going to have wonderful guests. First up, we're going to have Mr. Gary Owens from beautiful downtown Burbank, and following him, Ms. Blythe Danner, live from New York City as well. At the bottom of every hour, we do something called Celebrating America. That's where I read a famous quote from an American, and you all get to try to guess who it is. And today, we also have a pizza that we'll be giving away from Red Brick Pizza. This is actually more than just a pizza. This is a meal with the family. Any large fire-roasted gourmet pizza, a full fresh chopped salad, Italian breadsticks, and a large gelato. But you're going to have to wait to call in because I will announce it a little bit later in the show today. So stay tuned for that. Some of you were a little anxious yesterday and jumped the gun before we actually had the pizza to give away. So that is that. Joining me today is perhaps, just maybe, the most recognizable baritone voice in America. Our next guest's career spans over four decades. You may remember him on Rowan and Martin's Laugh-In or as the voice of Space Ghost, Roger Ramjet, or the announcer of The Perils of Penelope Pitstop. If you've got a really good ear, you might recognize him as the voice of Walt Disney on countless rides there, or his latest endeavor on a Kia car commercial. He was the first radio star to be honored with a star on the Hollywood Walk of Fame, and he's smack dab between Walt Disney and Betty White. Pretty good company to keep. Gary Owens is an American disc jockey, and he's a voice actor. His polished baritone speaking voice frequently demonstrated as the announcer of Rowan and Martin's Laugh-In. Owens is equally proficient in sight or silly assignments as he's frequently heard on television, radio, and in commercials. He's best known as the voice of Space Ghost on Space Ghost. He was also on Space Ghost Coast to Coast in 1998. Welcome to the program, Gary Owens. Gary, how are you?
Fine, Billy. Thank you for the wonderful introduction.
Oh, man, how could I not do the honor of introducing you that way? I mean, you are a celebrity, and you need to be honored in that way.
Well, that's very kind of you.
Well,
I appreciate it.
Well,
yeah, I'm celebrating later this year my 50th anniversary of being in Hollywood.
50 years.
It's really been kind to me because I've been on 18 television series, including Laugh-In, of course, as you mentioned, and maybe 3,000 different commercials, not commercials, but cartoons.
I know, and that's something that most people don't realize, that you are very famous. I grew up listening to you, although I didn't know that it was your voice. I thought you were Roger Ramjet all this time.
Yes.
Oh, it was great. Loved it. Now, you were inducted into the Radio Hall of Fame back in 1994, so congratulations on that. You got your start. You cut your teeth in radio. Tell us about those early days of radio.
Well, the early days started back in Omaha, Nebraska, where Johnny Carson got started,
mm-hmm.
Dick Cavett got started, Marlon Brando got started.
That's right.
In radio, of course. Fred Astaire, quite a few people, Henry Fonda, all were in Omaha, Nebraska at one time or another.
And why do you think that was? Was it the corn-fed beef that kept you all going?
I think it was that, or perhaps the fact that they had a couple of very good stations there. Carson started, as I say, in broadcasting there, and he came to Hollywood zooming out,
mm-hmm.
and of course did very well on game shows before he became the host of The Tonight Show.
Which he's most noted for, and a wonderful interviewer in his own right.
Yes,
did you know
was.
Johnny Carson?
He was he was a good friend of mine.
Mm.
We would see each other. I would park near him in the parking lot at NBC for years. Not only did I do Laugh-In for 6 years there, but I was the voice of NBC for 10 years.
That's right.
And so I would see Johnny and Ed McMahon quite frequently. And we would chat about, I would say, hello, Omaha 1, and he would say, hello, Omaha 2.
That is incredible. So you think it was because of the power of the radio stations that drew so many celebrities to Omaha in the early days?
Well, yes, they had very good broadcasting, marvelous facilities, and so on.
Hmm.
And, of course, not a large city. It was about, when I was there, maybe about 400,000 people.
Right, which makes it so remarkable that you and Carson and Brando and everybody else came out of that city. Just incredible for the population size.
Well, that's true. There was a time when all the networks hired people from the Midwest. because there was no affectation of voice. In other words, if you were from Atlanta, you might have a southern accent at that time, or from Memphis or wherever it might be. But the Midwest always had kind of a straight and narrow kind of voice that you'd have on broadcast.
And that's what they were looking for, to appeal coast to coast.
Yeah, well, the Chet Huntleys and all of them, most of the people on the networks who were newscasters, we're all from the Midwest at one time or another.
Well, at CBS at one point started hiring Texans with Dan Rather, and even Cronkite had a
Well,
tad
that's
accent.
True. That is true. But Walter was from Minnesota.
That's right.
You know, and that's about as Midwest as you can get.
Yep, the heartland right there. Well, in your early radio career, you were kind of known for, like, wacky, invented words that you just came up with, and that set you apart.
Yes, Al Kelly and I were good friends. Al Kelly was a double talk artist, great funny man. And so we were having dinner one night in New Orleans, where I was before coming to Hollywood. And so having dinner, I said, "Oh, you're so great, because, you know, you sound like you're saying something real, and it means nothing whatsoever." So we created a word, insegrevious, which does not exist, of course.
Right.
However, Funk and Wagnalls decided they were going to put it in their dictionary. It takes 25 years to have a word in the dictionary.
I did not know that.
Nationwide usage of that word. So anyway, I would, on my radio show, my network and national radio show, always say, "Well, thank you very much. It's been insegrevious being here. And how's your nose?" Whatever it might be. So that's how that came about.
Incredible.
And there's still... the president of Funk and Wagnalls, Frank Scully, told me that they were going to put insegrevious in their dictionary. It has not come about yet, but who knows?
Who knows? Time will tell. Yeah.
Yes.
Incredible. Now, you're also known for another, I can't even pronounce it, Cornell Muffin?
Oh, well, Crenellamuffin.
Crenellamuffin.
A lot of the words that I do are just double talk words, and they have no meaning whatsoever. I have an article coming out with... Andy Simpson, Maddie Simmons' son Andy is the humor editor for the Reader's Digest.
Mm-hmm.
They did a nice article on a number of us about 3 or 4 months ago, but a new one is coming out very soon in which I tell 3 or 4 anecdotes that were just silly in my life, and of course I probably have only 10,000 of those kind of anecdotes.
Right.
But when I was narrating an album for Decca Records, I had a couple of best-selling albums on the Marx Brothers and W.C. Fields that sold, I think, a million albums.
Wow.
In those days.
Yeah, that's a lot.
And the one on the Marx Brothers was kind of interesting because it included all the original soundtrack, which were owned by Universal TV and movies, from all of their motion pictures. And Groucho was upstairs talking to Lou Wasserman, the head of Universal.
Head of Universal, right.
And they said, "Well, why don't you go downstairs in our studio, because they're doing an album about all of your movies that they owned, of course, Universal."
Right.
So Groucho popped in on me about 5 minutes before I was about to record, and I gave him 5 pages of dialogue and monologue that I had to read. And he looked it over, and he said, "No, that's fine. I want to make sure that it's absolutely correct." So when the album came out, Groucho called me at KMPC, where I was there for 2 decades, and I did my radio show every afternoon from 3 till 6. And so Groucho said, "Well, I just got a copy of the album, and I enjoyed your narration very much, and I love the music. Charles Bud Dant and his orchestra did the music under
it." Oh, okay.
And so anyway, he said, "You only made one mistake." And I said, "Well, how could I do that? You looked over the script." He said, "No, you did. You pronounced it Chico." And I said, "Well, that was his name, wasn't it?" He said, "Well, it was pronounced Chico."
Chico.
Yeah, because he was chasing chicks.
I see.
An old vaudeville comedian was a good friend. He used to play poker with all of the Marx Brothers. And he's the guy who pretty much named them. Groucho, because he was grouchy all the time. Chico, because he chased chicks. Girls. And Gummo, because he had gum shoes like detectives used to wear in hotels.
Oh, my.
And, of course, Harpo, because he played the harp.
Sure.
Anyway, I said, "Well, from then on," I pronounced it Chico from then on.
Yeah.
But I didn't know at the time. Most of the people in 1968 didn't.
We're talking to Gary Owens, everybody, just an absolute legend in the entertainment field. He's a triple threat, television, radio, and the recorded word. We just found that out. Do you have time to come back for another segment? We've got a break for some commercials now.
Of course.
All righty, great.
People that make you employed.
That is right. Then we got to honor them with their commercials. All right, well, let's do the weather. Weather is going to be beautiful. Let's face it. It's beautiful here along the coast. If you take a look outside, you can see we've got that early morning June gloom because we are in the month of June. But that's going to burn off about midday, anywhere between 11 and 12 o'clock, depending on where you are, close to the coast or inland. And then temperature is going to be rising up to the mid-70s if you're on the coast, and a little bit higher than that, the high 80s if you are inland. Overnight, we're going to be partly cloudy and fog rolling in. We're going to be down into the 50 degrees if you're along the coast, and down into the low 50s if you are inland. That is weather. Now for the traffic.
Looking real good out there, Billy. Hit and run accident. No injuries. Lynn Road on ramp to the 101 North, not slowing down traffic at all. And over on the 126, it looks like if you are eastbound, we have something in the road there, a traffic hazard center divider, but not slowing the traffic down much. Just something to look at there. 23 looking good. And drive up to Santa Barbara, also excellent. It's AM 1400, KKZZ.
Welcome back, everybody. This is Billy the Brain, and you're listening to Brainstorming with Billy the Brain. We're doing the best interviews in America. Right now we have with us a very special guest from a secret bunker somewhere in Southern California. Mr. Gary Owens is well known to many of you as the voice of Space Ghost, or if you watch television as the announcer on Rowan and Martin's Laugh-In, or if you're old enough to remember radio. He was on radio here in Los Angeles for a number of years. Before we get back to the interview with Gary, and I want to dive right back into that, I have got to give a big shout out to Freeman Michaels for the show that he does immediately before us. He is just full of energy, and he and his co-hostess Jordan Mercedes do a fantastic job bringing you interesting angles on all sorts of health and fitness issues that are out there. So congratulations to you out there, Freeman. Thank you for the show that you have. Now back to our guest. Gary,
I have a health note for Freeman.
Oh, dude, yes. What is it?
Pat McCormick did this on my show one day. He said the average canary has a heartbeat of 1,800 beats per second. However, when he gets excited, he explodes.
We're talking to Gary Owens, everybody, and that's the irrepressible humor of Gary Owens right there. Gary, you're probably best known as the announcer on Rowan and Martin's Laugh-In, at least for people of my generation. How did you come up with the trademark hand over the ear?
Well, that was just a satire on the announcers of people when I was a kid, because all of the announcers, when they did dance band remotes, didn't want to wear headphones or earphones on stage.
Uh-huh.
So they would cup their hand over their ear with the orchestra playing in the background, and they wouldn't mess up their hair either, because they wouldn't wear earphones on stage.
Yeah, the rumor was many of them had hair pieces, and that was the reason.
That's true. That is true. And so that's how it came about, and I was sort of satirizing all of the announcers that I remember as a kid.
Oh, I love it. An homage to early radio. That's great. Now, Rowan and Martin Laugh-In was absolutely a revolutionary show when it first came out in the very late 60s. Why do you think that it was so revolutionary and changed television?
Well, the pacing was faster than any other show in the history of TV. Even though Hell's a-Poppin', which came about in the 30s in movies and on live stage in New York City, had a fast pace. Laugh-In had as many as, maybe 10 sketches in 1 minute. And
wow.
That had never been seen on television before. So if you didn't like the joke that was just there, you could go on to the next one, or the next one, or the next one.
Absolutely.
And that's really why it was a great, great success. We had 50 million people watching every Monday night on NBC.
50 million people. Numbers like that ever again in television?
I don't think so, Billy, because today, the number one show might have 11 million people. That's the difference.
Big difference, big difference. Let me shotgun some names at you just from that show and other work that you've done. And let's start right at the top. Dan Rowan, what kind of a guy was he?
Well, Dan was more reserved than Dick was. Dan started as a used car salesman in Santa Monica. And Dick was working as a bartender in Hollywood.
Oh.
That's how they met, and they did an act together. So they were entirely different. They both had a wonderful sense of humor, but they were entirely different kinds of personalities.
And I think that's what made it work.
More reserved.
Yeah. Now, that's, what I think, what made it work. What about Dick himself? Was he just as zany off stage, off air, as he was on air?
Oh, yeah, always. And then he became a great director. He directed many of the Bob Newhart shows.
I didn't know that.
And Bob was just honored the other night at the TV Academy.
Yes, and rightfully so,
too. Oh, sure. Yeah, I've known Bob since day one. He came out from Chicago with a disc jockey named Dan Sorkin. Dan was very big in Chicago, and later I got him a job in San Francisco at KSFO.
Ah.
And so anyway, he brought Bob Newhart by, and this was, I think, 1961, when he had his first album for Warner Brothers. And so I got to know him very well.
Oh, goodness. Wow, yeah. That's great.
Yeah. So, you know, when you work in the, this will be my 50th year in Hollywood in December, and they're going to have a celebration for me.
As they should.
That's a long time to be anywhere.
True.
I was vice president for Gannett, the biggest media company in the world, for a number of years. And we had KISS FM and a number of radio stations. Also, 150 newspapers around the country and USA Today.
And USA Today, sure.
And Al Newhart and I wrote for the same newspaper back in South Dakota when I was just a kid.
Well, that is interesting. Now, you do herald from South Dakota, Mitchell, South Dakota, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes, that's right.
And it's a beautiful but very small city. Well, did you ever make it out to the Corn Palace?
Oh, yeah, I did broadcast from there. When I was 16 years old, they didn't want to hire a big-time New York or Chicago announcer, so I would do shows. Oh, with Merv Griffin, who was part of the Freddie Martin Orchestra at that time.
Wow.
Duke Ellington and his marvelous orchestra with Ray Nance and all those people. Stan Kenton, all of these people I worked with when I was still a teenager.
Incredible.
And I worked with Harry Truman. And I've got an anecdote in the book coming up. I can't mention it because there are a couple of naughty words.
Okay. Well, we don't want to do that. But Harry Truman had a potty mouth?
No, well, a little bit.
Oh, my goodness.
It wasn't a potty mouth. It's just that he expressed himself a little different than a lot of other people.
I see. Yes. I see. That is incredible exposure for a person of 17 years. I mean, your roots clearly in entertainment are just outstanding, phenomenal. Let me get back to the list. Goldie Hawn, what was she like?
Oh, she was wonderful. Her wonderful, giggly little laugh made her famous.
Absolutely.
From laughing on to doing great, great, giant movies and you know, one of the biggest names in show business.
Hmm. Yeah. Do you keep in touch with her?
Oh, well, I saw her about 2 years ago was the last time.
Okay.
You know, she does movies all over the world, so she's not always in town. She lives in Aspen, Colorado part of the time, too.
Ah.
With Kurt Russell.
Sure, sure. Very famous.
And, but she was a star from day one.
Her
wonderful little giggle would always just, people would write in and say, oh, my God, who is that person?
Very endearing, very endearing.
She was, and she still is.
Henry Gibson.
Henry Gibson just passed away this year.
I know he did, sadly.
And he was one of my best friends. Interesting story that you may not know about. When he was going to the Actors Studio in New York City, he roomed with a man named John Voight.
No.
And they shared a small apartment because they didn't have much money in those days. They shared an apartment together, and Henry slept in the bathtub. And John would sleep on the sofa, because John is quite tall, as you know.
Yeah.
So that's where they got their start.
Interesting. Very interesting. Now, you were the voice of Disney for many, many years. Did you ever have the opportunity to meet Mr. Disney?
Oh, yes, I did, back in 1961 or 62. He died in 1966.
Yes.
But my star on the Walk of Fame in Hollywood is between Walt Disney and Betty White.
Great company.
Oh, yes, very much so. And I was very honored to be there, and I still am.
What sort of man was Mr. Disney?
Well, he was a very avuncular, which means uncle-like gentleman.
Mm-hmm.
He was very nice. He was always in charge, but he was very, very nice.
Incredible.
And, back in the early 60s, I was narrating a couple of cartoons, and he just happened to be at the studio that day, and he walked by. And he came in. When I was about to narrate, I can't remember what they were. One was a Mickey Mouse cartoon. The other, I think, was a Goofy cartoon. And so, anyway, they're cleaning up because the guys in the recording booth say, Mr. Disney's coming down the hall. Hurry up. Get this clean. Because they had newspapers spread out over the table and so on. So they're getting ready for the thing. And I'm just standing there, and I've got my hand on the door, just up against the door. And someone opens it from the other side and breaks my little finger at that point.
Ouch.
So anyway, Walt comes in. I meet him for the first time. And And I said, I'd love to shake your hand, Mr. Disney, but I'm bleeding to death, just as a joke. And he said, well, you are, aren't you? So he phoned, and within 2 minutes, a nurse on the lot at Disney came in and put a splint on my finger.
Wow. Now that's
that's
service.
That's how I first met him.
That's service, let me tell you. You had many, many famous guest stars on the show. Did you get a chance to interact with the guest stars when they were there?
Oh, all of them. Yeah, I probably did 35,000 interviews in my Hollywood days, and I'm still doing my Hollywood days. But at least 35,000 people that I interviewed.
Wow.
And so I probably worked with everybody who's famous one way or the other.
Well, I'll never forget John Wayne appeared on Rowan and Martin's Laugh. And what was John Wayne like?
He was great. Well, he was a neighbor of ours in Encino for a number of years. So I knew him off camera as well as I did on camera. But he was just great. And he had a wild sense of humor.
He
was just wonderful.
He had a wild sense of humor?
Yeah,
like, well, give us an example.
He had an offbeat sense of humor. And it wasn't always germane to telling on the air.
Oh, okay.
Necessarily.
All right.
But he was a very, very kind gentleman.
Ah.
And I remember when he did the, what was it called? Where the 12 young boys are taking
Cowboys.
Him across country.
It's called The Cowboys.
The Cowboys, right. And Bruce Dern was the villain.
Yes. Great movie.
Oh, it was a marvelous, marvelous film. And so John had a lot of bon mots. And, of course, you know, when he was doing Genghis Khan, remember he played the part of Genghis Khan?
Oh, my goodness. Yes, I had to dredge that up from my memory, but I do remember that movie.
Oh, yes. Well, he was a great man. He was a very, very nice person all the way around. And he was always, I worked with him maybe six times in the 1960s and 70s and even into the 80s.
Wow.
At that point.
Oh, that
but
is
a kind gentleman all the way. And he was indeed America's favorite cowboy.
Without a doubt. We're talking to Gary Owens, everybody. Just an incredible wealth of knowledge about Hollywood. 50 years in Hollywood coming up. Unbelievable to me. Now, we're going to change gears just a little bit. Something that our listeners may not know, that you were instrumental in television history and children's education because you created the Electric Company for Sesame Street.
Well, I was one of the writers for the Electric Company.
Tell us about that.
But I was on Sesame Street for 25 years, and that is the TV series that has the most Emmys of all time. Guess how many Emmys Sesame Street has.
You know, I wouldn't know. It'd be a pure guess. 35.
120.
Not even close. Wow.
That's the most Emmys of any television show in history. And then when we finished with doing Sesame Street, we went on to the Electric Company. We included Bill Cosby, Artie Johnson.
Yes.
Myself. And, you know, so I'm so proud to be part of all of those. I worked with Lou Costello in his later years. And it was kind of interesting, something you may not know, but Lou Costello paid for the nose job that Dean Martin got when he first came.
No kidding.
Yes, when he first came to Hollywood.
Wow.
He worked for Lou. Dean worked for Lou. And so Lou paid $500 for his nose job, his first nose job.
Wow. Oh, that's incredible. We're talking to Gary Owens, everybody. Now, Gary, we just got a couple of seconds left before I let you go. Besides the, tell us about the Reader's Digest article and what other projects are you working on?
Well, I'm working on a new cartoon series that'll be starting fairly soon called Captain Rochester, and I play another superhero in that. And I've been so fortunate over the years. I guess probably the best, although Roger Ramjet, you know, Tom Selleck and I flew to Canada together some years ago. And he was doing a motion picture, and I was doing Toyota commercials in Canada.
Right.
And he said, you know, our favorite, when he went to Van Nuys High School, he said, we would always talk about Roger Ramjet the next day after seeing it on TV. It was our favorite cartoon strip of all time.
I absolutely loved it, and I told you I knew your voice long before I knew you as the man, because you, in my mind, were Roger Ramjet.
Yeah, well, I still am.
Yeah. Gary Owens, if we're talking to Gary Owens, everybody, Gary, it's a delight. I can't believe how quickly the time goes. We do something at the bottom of the hour, and you're perfectly welcome to listen in as we do this. It's called Celebrating America. It's where I read a famous quotation from an American, and everybody in the studio gets to guess who it is.
Oh, great.
So, yeah, so if you don't mind, hang around for this. This is today's quote. A wise and frugal government, which shall leave men free to regulate their own pursuits of industry and improvement, and shall not take from the mouth of the labor the bread it has earned. This is the sum of good government. Who said that? A wise and frugal government, which shall lead men free to regulate their own pursuits of industry and improvement, and shall not take from their mouths the labor of the bread that is earned. This is the sum of good government.
I'll give you a guess?
I'll give you a hint. It's one of the presidents, and I'll give you a hint. It's one of the early presidents.
One of the early presidents. Is that what you said?
Yes.
Yeah. Would it have been Thomas Jefferson?
Oh, ding, 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 ding. Absolutely right on. Thomas Jefferson said, a wise and frugal government, which shall leave men free to regulate their own pursuits of industry and improvement, and shall not take from the mouths the bread that it is earned. This is the sum of good government. That was Thomas Jefferson,
what
one of our founding fathers.
Wasn't he great?
He was a wonderful man, a great president, and one of Billy the Brain's idols. Gary, thank you so much. It's been a pleasure.
Well, Billy, thank you so much. Always a pleasure chatting with
you. Thanks. Talk to you soon.
Have a great day.
And you do the same.
Bye-bye.
Bye.